I'm only as hip as my guests. And today I have a great guest. But I got to tell you something, people. I'm going back east because, you know, my lovely girlfriend Joanne lives back there. And I'm actually going back for 2 weeks. We'll go back for 2.5 weeks at Christmas time. And I noticed I don't really have any winter clothes left. So it's 100 degrees out today. And I'm going home after this. I record the show. And I'm buying sweaters on Old Navy because they're 35% off. And I just feel weird doing that. But our first guest is, I got to tell you a little story. Our first guest is Rondell Sheridan. How you doing, Rondell?
I am good. I want to hear the story.
Well, back in the day when I started out doing stand-up, you know, people, I talked about the Comedy Factory outlet and the Comedy Works, and I was a doorman at the Comedy Factory outlet, and Rondell would probably come in once every 6 months, and he was always a, first of all, just amazing to watch, because he's such so good on stage, and as a young comic, it was really good because he was animated, and but what I remember about him was he was a really, really good dresser, and I still remember I came up to you one night, and I said, I'm working the door, I have my Comedy Factory outlet, red jacket, and I still, my listeners know this, I have like an idiot savant memory, I remember stuff, like I remember a show I did with T. Sean Shannon where he bought me a beer, and he's been on the show a few times, He's like, how do you remember that? I remember you're wearing a shirt, okay, and it was like, I think it had skulls on it. It was black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember I said, man, you dress so good. And you go, well, every season I go out and I spend this much money to just buy a new wardrobe. And I always remember that because you always came in looking really, I mean, really, really smooth. I mean, it just, and not like, you know, like I want to be hip, but just good. I mean, where did you find your fashion taste from? Were you always as a kid? Did you dress well?
I always say I missed the gay gene by 1 millimeter of a second. I love women. I love clothes. I love home shows, home design shows. I've always had the thing. But when I was a sophomore in high school, I had a subscription to GQ magazine.
Okay, see, that's young.
And back when GQ was, the reason it was called GQ was Gentleman's Quarterly.
Right.
It came out 4 times a year.
That's so funny.
And then they had a summer issue. Then they had a spring issue. And I guess by the time they were coming out 6 times, we might as well come out every month.
I forgot. It makes sense because I get it.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Now it doesn't make sense.
I know.
Why it's called Gentleman's Quarterly.
Because you forget. Now people are probably going, why? And they probably go, just, you know, I always cracked up with those magazines, which I hate it was. You're like, oh, man. You know, you're in college. You're like, I want to wear that. I want to dress like that. And you're like, what? $500 for a tie? I'm paying this for Bugle Boys. I mean, come on. So you were watching. So you got into fashion.
I got into fashion. One of my goals was in GQ magazine, in the first ad, which was generally on page 2 or 3, whatever it's called, there was some watch company, and they'd always use a celebrity, and they would never say the celebrity's name in the ad. And I always was like, man, I would love to be that famous, where I'd be the guy just posing with the watch, and you go, oh, that's such, because they'd never put the name. That's how famous. You never had to go, who is that? They look familiar. You would go, I know who that is.
That's funny. That's like, I always wanted to be my goal, and it's still, I've always wanted to be on sitcoms.
Uh-huh.
The Ann guy, like, and Steve Cooper, where you had some credibility, like Jason Alexander won a Tony, but then he was the Ann guy.
Yeah.
I've always wanted that, but I forgot about the watch. You're right. That's when you sit there and go, oh yeah, like Brad Pitt's on it. It's like their wrists, and they don't even need the name. You're right.
And this was like, let's see, graduated from grammar school in 72, so this was 74.
God, so who are some of the
people? I can't even remember.
Starsky and Hutch?
Could have been Starsky and Hutch. Could have been like, but they were like big day. You're like, damn, I wanted that. And then, also, I grew up on the south side of Chicago, so we had the platform shoes. I went to a seminary boarding school.
Okay,
so I was the second black guy to graduate from my boarding school. So we had to wear a suit and tie.
Okay.
We had to wear a jacket and tie. So, like, when you see any picture of me at my boarding school, at, you know, this was leisure suits. People were wearing leisure suits. But you'd see what I was wearing, and you're like, it'd be a sea of white kids. White kid, plaid suit platforms.
That's funny.
You're like, he is not from this area.
Now, was it a boarding school? Were you a bad kid, or was it just?
No. It was a seminary.
Okay.
Like I have two friends that wound up becoming priests.
Okay.
And I would have become a priest if I was Methodist.
How do you sit there? I mean, did your parents say you can become a priest? Just like as a kid, do you sit there and go, I want to be a priest?
No. What happened was I went to this place. It was called Salesian Prep. It was an order of Salesian priests, and they had a summer camp, and so my mom sent me to summer camp. 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade. I went there for, or 7th, 8th, whatever. I went there for summer camp for 3 years. So she got me away from Southside Chicago.
Okay.
So for the summer, I went to summer camp there. So I knew about the school, but I only knew it from as a camper. So when it came time to apply to take the test, I took the test for all the area of Chicago Catholic high schools. And I probably, if you got Chicago listeners, I probably would have went to Mendel or Leo. But my mom had said, after I took the test, my mom went, oh, yeah, you're going to Salesian.
Okay.
And I went, wait, what? I didn't have, they don't have girls up there. You were going to Salesian. Yeah, but that's far away. You are going to Salesian. Well, so she sent me there. That's
what's so funny with the camp, because like I grew up in a very, very Jewish area. Mm-hmm. I'm not Jewish. Mm-hmm. And it was like all the Jewish kids, you have to go to the good camps.
Yeah.
But this is not like, we went to a camp called Mount Misery. I'm not making it up. It was like, and there was like kids from other towns. And I remember there was this chubby little black kid from Lawnside. And he's always
that could have been me.
He always would curse. And I know he's like, I'm going to wait, wait, wait. And I'm like, what? And he's like, wait, wait. And I'm like, what? And then there's like this real tall.
Like mush mouse from Cosby Kid.
I was like, but everything he cursed. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Because, like, I mean, in my school, we had, in my elementary school, we had one African American,
uh-huh.
Greg Waddies.
Uh-huh.
And we always remember he wanted to be white so bad. Like, he played guitar, but like when he played guitar, he played rock and roll, but he loved Santana. I'm like, well, if you want to be white, you should be playing Santana. Play Jimmy Page. Yeah. You know what I mean? So did you pick your clothes up when you were at that age?
I did. Part of it was I went to Catholic grammar school, so I knew how to iron a shirt. Like, when I hear comics talk about, I don't know how to iron a shirt, how does it fit on the ironing board? I was in sixth grade. I was ironing all my shirts because my mom went, look, I got a job. You have nothing to do. You will be ironing. I had my Saturday chores, and my Saturday chores was to do the laundry. And then when I got home from the laundromat, I quickly ironed all my shirts Saturday.
Okay.
So I didn't have to do them for the rest of the week. So I'd sit there. I've learned I can iron a shirt like
that. See, that's good. I'm good at it, but I always do that. The thing when I iron it, which pisses me off, is when I put the sleeves on and I iron, always something happens. So the one side of the sleeve gets that line that won't come out.
Oh.
And you sit there and you're sitting there and you're pressing on it. And then the other sleeve gets it. So I'm like, I just roll up my sleeve.
One of the things I learned earlier on, I don't know how I learned it, after I got my shirts and they're all dry, I have a spray bottle. If I don't have a spray bottle, I'll just go to the sink. So I roll the shirt up, and I wet the shirt.
Okay.
I, like, wet a huge part of the shirt and then fold it into a ball so that the whole shirt stays moist.
Okay.
And then I fill the iron. I have to have a super steamed iron.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you just steam it, and once the shirt's moist, it dries really fast, and it dries perfectly.
Did you ever use that spray starch?
I did, but sometimes it would get after two sprays, it gets all gunky.
And I just know that. I got a pair of pants. I was working in the restaurant business, and I was doing marketing for him, and I saw he couldn't wear jeans.
Uh-huh.
So I got these pants. I said, oh, you know, and they said, it said, they're like Hagar. And
oh,
like,
the Hagar slack.
And they were like, no wrinkle, no stain. Yeah. I swear to God, they're wrinkled, so when I put that damn spray on, it stained them.
Oh, yeah, it gave a shine on it.
I was going, wait a second, they're wrinkled. And they're stained. I got ripped off. So you grew up in Chicago. Now when did you? I mean, you've done acting, you do comedy, and you direct, do photography. When did you know you wanted to do comedy? Did you watch comedy as a kid?
Oh, I became a comic by accident. But if I could go back to the future and look at my record collection, I would immediately go, oh, you like comedy.
Okay.
First album I ever bought was Smothers Brothers comedy album.
Okay.
I listened to Merv. I listened to all the afternoon.
Mike Douglas.
Mike Douglas. All those guys.
See, that was so funny. Like, and listeners, just, you know, Mike Douglas. We're not talking about the actor. There was a guy named Mike Douglas.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forget this.
That was shot in Philadelphia. And I grew up 10 minutes outside Philly.
Was it really?
In the very beginning, Mike Douglas was from Philly. Then I think like towards the end of it, it came out to L.A.
Oh, wow.
But that was shot. And I always, like, as a kid, I wanted to go to Mike Douglas. And my mom's like, no, you know, you guys, you're in school. Okay, we missed school to go to Mike Douglas. Because they shot in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
But that was so funny. There were so many comics in there. And then Dinah Shore had a show, too.
Dinah Shore. I was trying to think who's in the kitchen with, and I couldn't think of the word Dinah when I got that. And then I was a latchkey child. My mom worked at the post office, so she worked the 11 at night to 7 in the morning. So I was up. I'd stay up until there was no more TV. So I'd watch Johnny, and back when Johnny was 2 hours.
Okay. You know what's funny about the no TV? It's funny is back then, people don't understand now, the young kids, they used to get the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, yeah, the sign-off. I forgot about the sign-off. Dun, 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 dun. dun, dun, dun. At that point, it was click. You never, I never heard the end of the Star Spangled Banner. You'd have to fall asleep and wake up to.
Did you fall asleep to TV when you were
No, I can't fall asleep to TV. I just turn it off because I can't sleep with that. I can sleep with background noise.
Okay.
But I can't sleep with the TV because I start listening.
That's funny.
I go, well, what's going on? Now I'm awake.
I always fell asleep. When I was a kid, my mom would let me, my mom and dad, on my birthday, they would let me stay up and watch Monday Night Football at 9 o'clock. And I would start, and I'm not used to them. I'm used to going to bed at 8.
Yeah.
And it used to begin at 9.
Yeah.
So by the time it's the first half, I catch myself getting tired. And so I would go get my football helmet, put that on. I think it's going to keep me awake. And then I wake up, like, in the third quarter in a football helmet on my parents' bed because I couldn't watch it downstairs because they were watching their TV, but it was my treat. And I wake up laying on their bed, and they'd be coming in the room, and they'd be like, Steven, get up. It's a game. I'm watching the game. No, you have a football helmet on your head. So you listened to comps. So you were listening to it. Now, when did you decide to get into it? When you went to school, were you in production acting or anything?
I came to New York to go to Circle and Square Acting School. On the advice of Carol Burnett, who
in
I never met.
High school, wait.
No, I went to finish high school.
Okay.
That was the boarding school.
I thought it was elementary. Okay.
And then I went to college. I went to Marquette University.
Marquette. They used to have
Milwaukee. Al McGuire.
It was Mark McGuire. Did he go there?
Al McGuire was the coach.
Oh, Mark McGuire.
No, Mark McGuire went to DePaul.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, they had some. I remember, we're talking like when Al McGuire was there. I can't think who it was. It really
Butch Lee, Bernard Toon, Jerome Whitehead. You know why I know all this? I was a cheerleader at Marquette.
My freshman
year was the year we won the national championship.
Now, who was on that team?
Butch Lee, Bernard Toon, Jerome Whitehead.
I remember watching
assistant
that.
Coach for Cleveland right now, Jimmy Boylan, Bernard Toon, Bird, Robert Bird. I'm missing a bunch of players.
Now, what made you want to cheerlead?
Okay, now you turn it into a longer story.
No, because I saw your cheerleading bit on you were real.
You know what happened?
What happened?
If you ever get into a TV show, never tell the writers anything about yourself.
Okay.
Because they will use it against you. So one day I'm telling them, I go, hey, you know, I did a music video. And they're like, what music video did you do? And I said, I did a Stevie Wonder music video. And they go, you did not. I go on the internet, type in Stevie Wonder part-time lover. And they came back and go, you were a part-time lover to Stevie Wonder. And I go, I had a life outside of this.
Right.
And so they were like, what else did you do? And I said, I was a cheerleader for 4 years at Marquette. I said, my freshman year, our cheerleading squad was 12th in the nation. We had two guys that were all state in gymnastics. We had three girls that were all state in gymnastics. Our cheerleading squad was phenomenal. But what happened was I went to a small boarding school, played basketball, soccer, and baseball. So when I got to Marquette, my mom, like I said, single mom, she worked at the post office. I knew that tuition was going to be huge for my mom, but I needed spending money. So I said, dude, I played goalie for 4 years in high school. I said, you know what? Let me find out about the team. Found out that their goalie was a senior. So I go, I'm just going to hang out my freshman year. I'm going to be the starting goalie.
Right.
So I go to soccer practice the first day. First day there, walking back with the team. And when you're walking to soccer, you got your cleats on. You click, 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 walking down the street. So I'm talking to guys. I go, so how many scholarship spots do they got? And they all start laughing. And I go, what's the deal? And they go, dude, it's soccer club. And I go, no. So the next day I get a job at the cafeteria.
Okay.
And I go, now I got spending money. But I would always was into things. So I see tryouts for cheerleading. And I only knew cheerleading. I never watched college basketball.
Right.
So I knew cheerleading from college football.
And it was
they throw the girls up. And I go, I could do that. So for our auditions for cheerleading, we had little seminars. They would teach you how to do stuff because you had to know how to do certain things for the tryouts. So I learned how to lift and do all that stuff. But my freshman year was just glorious. We had a squad of 10 men, 10 women, and then two alternates. And everybody's arranged by your rank, 1 through 12.
Okay.
So I was 12th. I was the last alternate, meaning I would never get to cheer unless the first alternate could make it, and then someone from the regular home squad could make it. I cheered the first 7 games.
Really?
First 7 games. On my floor, I thought I was one of the regular cheerleaders. And then the end of story, on the road to the Final Four my freshman year, they said, anybody interested during spring break to go on the road to the Final Four? all my friends were going to Florida for spring break, and I couldn't afford to go to spring break. And I go, you know what? I'm not going to go back home to Chicago. I'll go on the road to the Final Four, see how far we get. So we make it to the finals. So Al McGuire comes back and to our cheerleading coach. Remember, we have a traveling squad. The top people who auditioned made the traveling squad. I'm way last. Al McGuire said, all the cheerleaders who went during their spring break on the road with us, they get priority over everyone else.
Wow.
So I made it, went all the way to the finals.
Oh, see, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was
that must have been great.
Oh, it was fantastic.
So you did that. Okay, so now we'll go back to the other story about New York. See, this is what my whole show is. We sit there and talk. Because I always say, that's why comics don't come on and do bits, because comics are such interesting people, and they can just sit there and they get going and you're talking, and because there's so much stuff we see in our lives. I mean, it's crazy. So you got out, you know, but that's so cool. You're how old are you?
54.
Okay, I'll be 48. So you're 6 years. I probably saw you on TV cheering.
Oh, you saw Marquette.
I watched all of it.
And I used to do this annoying thing that I didn't know that TV announcers would talk about until somebody told me, and I go, that's so cool, they're talking about me. We had these big megaphones. And I would sit underneath the basket, so when the other team would shoot free throws, I'd time it, because if you did it wrong, you'd get a technical. So I'd time it. I put my mouth on one of the megaphone, a huge megaphone.
Right.
And you put it in, you go, right before they would do it. And cheerleaders aren't supposed to do that. Right before
I know. But do you ever see that they show in a Duke game where this guy, it's Duke, North Carolina, the guy's about to take a foul shot, and some guy just shines his ass. And he got thrown out of the game. But the guy from North Carolina missed the shot.
Oh, that's bonus.
He was like the most popular guy on campus after that. Like the basketball players loved him. But it's just, yes, cheerleaders shouldn't be heckling.
One of my favorite stories is that I hate Notre Dame with a passion.
I hate them.
What's funny about Notre Dame? So many other different schools hate Notre Dame, which is great.
Everyone hates Notre Dame. Except people went to Notre Dame.
I know. But the first time we played Notre Dame was one of the games I got to cheer, right? And like I said, I'd never watched college basketball.
Was Kelly Trapuca playing?
Yeah. So, and Adrian Dantley.
Okay.
So, I knew Adrian because one of our cheerleaders dated Adrian Dantley. So I was like, how could you date him?
Yeah, he's on the other team. Yeah. Jerk.
So anyway, I knew nothing about them. So we played at the Milwaukee Arena where the Milwaukee Bucks play. There's 17,000 fans, right? So we're kicking Notre Dame's butt. It's towards the end of the game. 17,000 people start to sing a song that involves their coach's last name.
Okay.
I have no idea who their coach is. All I know is 17,000 people cannot enunciate. What they're singing is, goodbye, Digger. Goodbye, Digger.
Right.
But Digger, sung by 17,000 people, doesn't sound like Digger. And I'm like, what the hell? When did our fans become so racist that they are just throwing the N-word out?
Oh, my God, like, that is so funny.
White guys look at me in the face. Goodbye, Digger. I'm like, are you serious? My buddy doesn't.
I want to transfer.
My buddy doesn't. He goes, Rondell, the coach's name is Digger. Just say goodbye, Digger. And I pause and I go, that is the stupidest name for a white man to ever have, ever.
That's classic. That's so funny. Oh, my God. And you're probably like so furious.
I know.
You're like, these are my team.
And it's my school.
I know.
Singing.
I know there's a lot of white people in Milwaukee, but
really?
I didn't think they were racist.
Seriously?
So
on advice of Carol Burnett.
Now how did you get her? I mean, how did that happen?
Let me explain.
Okay.
Sophomore year, Carol Burnett's show is slamming Saturday night, must-see TV.
Loved it.
So at the end of the show, sometimes she'd have questions and answers. And this little girl stands up and she says, I want to become an actress. What should I do? And Carol said, go to college and major in anything but acting. So you have something to fall back on. So when you asked me about was this in the back of my head, acting was. If I'd become a biz ed major, I got recruited by Aetna Life Insurance. And I graduated in 1980, and they were recruiting me really hard. And they were offering a job that paid $32,000 in 1980, plus a car. When my mom busted her butt at the post office, I think maybe she made $28,000 a year. $32,000 in 1980?
Oh, yeah. And a car.
You the man.
You probably got one of those goofy-looking cell phones in there, too.
Oh, I would have had one of those.
You had to get one of them.
But I was not a business major, and my math scores were horrible. horrible.
Okay.
And I kept trying not to show it to them. They're like, Rondo, we really need to see your math scores. You were so funny. Your communication, because I was a communication major. Go, we'd love to have you on the team. We need to see those math scores. And I was trying to think. Finally, they got them. They're like, yeah, this is corporate insurance, and you really need to fill to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And I was like, dang. So in the back of my head, I wanted to go to acting school. And one of my best friends at school, Sam Caladrino, was going to graduate school at NYU. And he said, well, here's a bunch of brochures that you could go and fill out. And this is the biggest – I do a motivational speaking, and I talk about this. I begin it with this story.
Okay.
So I'm in the elevator. It's January. And it might have been February. And Sam goes, hey, I got all these brochures from Circle and Square, Neighborhood Playhouse, RADA, Lambda, the two acting schools in England, all this stuff. So I'm looking through them all, and I'm like, oh, this could be interesting. And I missed the deadline, application deadline, audition deadlines for all of them, every single one, except for this school called Circle in the Square in New York. Missed the application deadline, missed the letter recommendation deadline, missed all the regional audition deadlines, except they had the last audition spot in New York City. So I go, huh. And I now at this point, Aetna's gone. I have no idea what I'm going to do. I have 3 more months, and I graduate from college. So that Monday, I pick up the phone, and I call Circle in the Square. Keep in mind, 48 hours ago, 24 hours ago, I'd never heard of Circle in the Square.
Right.
Okay? I pick up the cell phone. I pick up the phone.
Right.
From the wall.
Exactly.
And they go, Circle in the Square. And I go, hi, this is Rondell Sheridan. I'm just calling to find out the status of my application. And she goes, okay, yeah, please hold. And I hear applications. And I go, hi, my name is Rondell Sheridan. And I just want to call in to check my status of my application. I haven't heard back from you guys. And she goes, oh, okay, hold on for a second. And she comes back and she goes, could you spell the name again? And I go, it's Rondell Sheridan, S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N. Keep in mind, I had not heard of this school 24 hours ago.
Right, right.
Okay? So she comes back and she goes, it's Sheridan? I go, yeah. I go, you know what? Try Rondell. A lot of people think Rondell is my last name. Sheridan is my first. And she goes, oh, okay, great, yeah. She comes back and she goes, I'm going to have you talk to the dean. I go, is there a problem? She goes, no, I'll just have you talk to the dean. And I go, okay. This is the best acting job on the phone ever done. I should have gotten an Academy Award for this. So the dean comes back and he goes, Mr. Sheridan, I hate to tell you this, but we can't seem to find your application. I go, oh, my God. I knew I should have called you guys months ago. This is what am I going to do? And I know in the back of my head, a month from now, they have one audition spot in New York available. I know this going in. So I'm just going on. I knew I should have called. It's going to take me another year. I got to get it. And he's trying to butt in. He's going, Mr. Sheridan. But I'm not letting him. I'm building this up. He goes, Mr. Sheridan, can you make it to New York? And I go, yeah, what's going on in New York? We have one last audition spot if you can make it to New York. And I go, but what about my application? We'll send you another one. Well, but I have my letters of recommendation. I'm sure you can get other letters of recommendation. I go, yeah, I guess I can. Okay. When is this again? Let me get a pen. I'm looking at the thing right there. Academy Award, Oscar.
Oh, God, that's awesome. See?
So now I got to go. I had auditioned for one play. I didn't get the part, and I was like, forget it. I'm not this stupid. So I had to go back to the dean of the theater department. I'm an idiot. I have no idea about acting at all. And I go, I got an audition for this school, and I wonder if you could help me with a monologue. I've never heard of it before. And he goes, what's the school? And I go, it's Circle and Square. And his jaw drops. He goes, you have an audition for Circle and Square? And I go, yeah, is it a good school or anything? He goes, yeah, they have their own Broadway theater. It's a fantastic school. So he helped me, did all this stuff. I go there, audition. I'd never auditioned except for the school play for anything. And I thought after you audition, then you go out to lunch, you talk and stuff.
Right, right.
I got the thank you very much, and so I got back on the train, went back to Milwaukee, and we had we're on the first floor of this apartment building, and when you open the windows, it looked right out to the street, and it was bust level. So depending on what you were wearing, I had 3 roommates at the time. Depending on what you were wearing, you either had the drapes open or closed because a person sitting on the bus would look directly at you.
All right.
Okay? So I get back, and this is over the summer, this is over spring break. So none of my roommates are there, and my mail is on my bed. And so on the bed is a thin envelope from Circle in the Square. And I go, wow, the letter beat me. But this was back when the post office was working.
That's
for 9 cents.
Yeah,
you could make a letter. You could mail a letter to Paris. It would get there quicker.
Yeah, it's...
So I looked at the thin letter, and I knew thin letter, rejection, thick letter, you know, you got to accept it. So I go, let me read the letter. So I read the letter, and it says, remember this day. Dear Mrs. Sheridan, every year at Circle in the Square, we get thousands of applications. Unfortunately, we cannot take them all. And at that point, there's more to the letter, but I folded it up, and I go, okay, well, Southside Chicago, you got to figure out what you're going to do now, because you ain't got nothing. So I went back to the kitchen, made a sandwich, ate a sandwich, came back, was in the living room, I'm looking at the letter, and I go, let me read this piece of crap. So, dear Mrs. Sheridan, every year Circle in the Square gets thousands of applications. Unfortunately, we can't accept all of them. However, in your case, we'd like to make an exception. And I go, I swear, I just read the two lines.
Right.
And that was it.
That's funny.
And I'm standing in the living room, and I'm just screaming. I'm like, woo, as a bus goes by, stops in front of my house. And at that point, I don't care. I'm just like, woo.
They're probably going, okay, for now, like, hey, there's a crazy guy.
Yeah, it's a crazy guy. So I get to school. One of my classmates' sister was a stand-up comic. She'd been doing stand-up for less than a year. Her name was Vanda Michaels, and I owe everything to Vanda Michaels. Met her at a party, had this mad, huge crush on her. And luckily, she had only been doing stand-up for less than a year. The club that she went to in New York was called Mostly Magic. And I got to see a ton of comics. I got to see Kathy, Curb Your Enthusiasm, the wife.
Susie Essman?
Susie Essman, yes. Okay. I got to see Susie the first time she performed on stage.
Now, you like comedy, and you went to school for the acting,
mm-hmm.
but did you, at any time before you met this girl, did you think you would go into stand-up?
No, not at all. But I spent the summer, two things happened to me the summer before I came to New York. I read two books. I read Steve Martin's Cruel Shoes, and I read Woody Allen's Without Feathers.
Okay, great.
Both short story books. And it made me go, I wasn't a literature major at all. I was a communication major. I was like, you know what? I'm going to write a book of short stories about a freshman's experience in college. And my first joke came out of this, that I had a girlfriend. Her name was Enorma Rotunda Butt.
Okay.
And what I loved about her was the fact that she could belch and set the drapes on fire. That's the first joke that I wrote.
That's funny.
So I would go that summer, I would go to parties. And you know, like people break dance and then they'd gather around and watch people break dance? I have this ability where I could just riff off people. And riff off people in a nice way, which is part of my act. And so something would happen at a party, and I'd do 3 minutes about something would happen. Just I got a loud voice, and just people gather around. It was just funny. And so it would happen at party after party after party. Different people, different things. I would come home and go, oh, yeah, I did that little thing. And so I would start writing down what I did, these little things. No intention of comedy whatsoever. I hadn't started school yet. So by the time I met Vanda and was going from club, these little clubs of all beginners, I'd go for like 2 months just watching comics. At some point, she said, you know what? You should try this. You're funny. You should try this. Went up on stage. I have a theory. I think I'm 90% right that the first time a comic goes on stage, they do okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the second time that you go on that you bite the dust because you're trying to emulate what you did and you cannot do
and
that.
And then it happened to me. I was at the Comedy Factory outlet, a first good set. And then, of course, I'm young. I'm out of college. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I had such a good set. Now I know nothing about the business. And, oh, yeah, they're going to ask me to come back and do weekend. And then I sit there and the guy goes, Clay Harry, says, oh, good job or whatever. And then I come back the next week and I just eat it. And I'm like, I didn't come back for like a month. But then I learned that a guy named George Sharp out of Philly, he told me, he goes, just keep hanging out, always go on stage. So I would go on, I mean, like, and back then, the Comedy Factor, there's like 25 people in an open mic. So it'd be like, you'd be there, and it'd be like two comics and the drunk sound man.
Yep.
And, but you would just go on stage. And after a while, you're like, wow, as long as you got two people, one a little bit of laughing.
Yep.
And it's true, but I just now, did you do good your first time?
First time I did, it was there, and the second time I died miserably. And I just started going from club to club. And that summer, I got something incredible happened to me. the Improv would have first Sunday of the month was open mic, was audition night.
Okay.
And you had to draw from a hat. She only had 16 numbers. The line sometimes would be around the corner. And you just literally at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, you'd walk up. There was a hat, blank pieces of paper, piece of paper that had a number. You'd pull a number. If you got a number, you came in an audition. First time I go, and I see a guy from that I went to acting school with. This is a year after I'd been in acting school. I see a guy I went to acting school. I go, oh, hey. I didn't know he was interested. He didn't know I was interested. So I get a number. I think I had 11 or something. And so now I got my little crew from like 3 months, not knowing that everybody in my crew had been trying to audition at the Improv.
Okay.
Everybody had been trying to get a number at the Improv. And so this is 1981, so no, 82. And at this point, audition night's packed. Silver Friedman would throw in a couple of the regulars in. People were just coming for comedy, and it's packed. So I go in. You got 5 minutes. I don't have 5 minutes of material.
All right.
I don't have 5 minutes. I got maybe a minute of material. Dressed sharp, like you said. I was always dressed up. I do my little crap. And the light, when you got it, was huge. Like, the audience knew you got the light. But they had been there, so they kind of know. Flash, it's getting right down. So I got the light, and I riff off the light. I go, did y'all just see the light? Because I wasn't sure if I had glaucoma. I didn't know if it was a sign from God, no more white women. I go, oh, damn, I got to give up white women. And so I do this whole riff. I'm now doing this riff, just this thing. Audience, boo, boo, laugh. So I walk outside, and they used to have a little TV at the bar so you could watch what was going on in the club.
Okay.
So I come out, and everybody's standing there, go, hey, Rondell, that was a good set. That was good. And the bartender, I never forget to me, he goes, hey, you should go talk to Silver. And I go, who's Silver? She was the woman sitting in the back of the room, but I didn't know who it was. And he goes, yeah, I think you should go talk to Silver. And I go, okay. So I go over there to Silver while there's another act on stage, and I go, bartender said I should talk to you. And she looks up at me, and she goes, well, I don't know if this is what you wanted or not, but you passed. And I go, oh, okay, cool. I love being stupid in the situation that you don't know what's given to you.
Right.
So it's like if you played poker for the first time and you got lucky hands, you'd kill everybody because they would never know how to read you because you have no idea what you
exactly.
got. Yeah, so I go back to my crew because they had already heard that I was going to go talk to Silver. And they go, so what did Silver say? And I never forget the looks on their faces because I said – Silver said, I passed. And before I said the P word, passed, they were all smiles. And then when I said the word passed, the smiles disappeared for a second. The smiles, but they had the right to.
Right.
I'd been doing comedy for 3 months.
Exactly.
I had no business being at the Improv, let alone passing at the Improv. And my next question was, what does that mean? I had no idea what it meant. And so they go, you get stage time? And I'm like, yeah, I don't have an act. And they go, the coolest thing, they go, you get $7 and a free burger. I am in now, man. Wait, I would have paid $7 for the burger. I get a free burger and $7? Shut up.
I got to do a quick few plugs.
Go.
What's your website?
RondellSheridan.com.
Now, are you on Twitter?
I am, but yeah. I'm not.
Okay. What's the show's coming? You're going. I know you're going on a cruise to Australia.
I leave tomorrow to go to New Zealand, and then just go to RondellSheridan.com. Okay. I literally can't figure out.
No, how's that to go? I mean, it must be a long cruise because it's a very long flight.
There are people in the back of the plane having sex. By the time we land, there is a baby. Okay, it is that long. It is 16 hours. It defies gravity. It's like if I went to college, I understand how things work. I don't understand how a plane can stay in the air that long.
I know.
Physically.
I fly back east once a month, to see my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And it's like a 5-hour flight. And I'm like, man. I'm like, and then I'm sitting there. I start getting tired. And I always crack up because people don't walk around. I'm like, you got to walk around, stretch, you know? And I always get the aisle so I can get up. I don't annoy people.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, okay, now, like, yeah, for you, it's 16. It's like, okay, imagine being three times. And it's not like they stop.
Oh, yeah. Well, see,
it's not a layover.
The thing I said, it's 16 hours. And at no point are the pilots even flicking the gas gauge going, we gonna make it? We gonna make it? I don't know. I'm not sure. We gonna, everybody's happy. Everybody's like, yeah, this is supposed to happen. Okay, we're good. 16 hours.
That's funny. People, see me next Saturday and next Friday and Saturday, October 12th and 13th, right near my old hometown where I grew up. I'll be at the Comedy Cabaret in Marlton, New Jersey, right at Casa Carolla Restaurant, Route 73, I think. I'm not sure. I used to go there. Also, people, Cooper Talk. CooperTalk.net is my website. Listen to past episodes. You can also go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and it's type in one word, Cooper Talk, and you can find episodes. And I want to say, I'm also going to start doing, there's a guy in Philly named Chris Scamuto, who has a Laughcast, LAFFcast.com. And it's basically, it's really grassroots. It's from his basement, and they do a bunch of podcasts of young Philly comics. And some, I mean, it's, you can go to the website, check it out. There's a Cut Muff Show, there's a Panic Hour, Verbal Assault, Bob and Dave and Terrible People, Danger Radio, Eric Toddcast, Down and Out Radio, Mike Salvi's World, and now me. I'm going to be on there because I talked to the guy. I said, hey, that's my background. I like Philadelphia. That's where I'm from. And every Thursday also, people, check out, follow me on Twitter at Cooper Talk, because I'm a regular contributor on Thursday nights to the Big Daddy Graham Show. I usually call in Philadelphia. And, okay, I will. No, he's saying, I always call in on Thursdays, and we talk about L.A., and then I'm gonna let you in on a joke, people, because you're not listening to the show. But I always make up actors I've seen, like I ran into, because that's me and Big Daddy's whole joke, but they're always small actors, and I rave that they're great. Like I said, I ran into Eddie Mecca, who played Carmine Ragusa in Laverne and Shirley, and Big Daddy Graham, we all get in an argument, but I act like I'm pissed off at him, because I'm like, no, Eddie Mecca's great, and I've done that with Eddie Mecca, and I did it with Jeff Downs, a guy I know who was in Asia, and yes, and I just go off, and some of the people I have met, some I haven't. So this week, I think I'm going to talk about Jonathan Lipnicki, who played the little kid in Jerry Maguire. I'm going to say how I met him at a Starbucks or a coffee bean. And I'm going to tell Big Daddy, just so you know, I'm spoiling it for you guys. I'm going to tell him how this guy was the reason why Jerry Maguire was so great. He's the reason why Cuba Gooding won the Oscar. And Big Daddy will get all mad. So anyway, that's my little plugs. And this Friday, I'm at Lulu's in Van Nuys, Lulu's Cafe in Van Nuys. I've never been to Van Nuys, but I'm going to go perform there.
19th and 20th of October this month, they'll be at the Ice House.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I was just there a few weeks ago. It's such a great room.
Yeah, I stopped working there for no other reason that I just got really busy, and I started coming back there about a year ago, and that room is just, that's just gasoline and dynamite.
I tell young comics, because I usually do, like, Bobby Oliver has her showcase there, but I'm one of the guest spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at these young comics, and I think, if you can't get a laugh here, get out of the business.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I did a jig on stage. I told Bobby I was going to do a jig after joke, and I did an Irish jig. And I said, I told you I was going to do a jig, and it got, like, an applause break. Yeah. I mean, the crowd is so, it's the most amazing crowd. And even the little room's good.
Yeah.
The little room's fun.
Yeah. That room is just, yeah, you're right. If you're at all cocky and you're beginning comic, oh, I'm so good. I go, okay, come to this room. If you can't kill in this room,
get out,
give business right now. Stop.
I've heard some bookers won't even look at tapes in the Ice House because they go, so
it's
easy.
It's weird. It's weirdly weird.
It is. And it's in Pasadena. It's like an alleyway. It's like the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
So, okay, so now, you know, we're going to get back to your career.
I keep looking at your Vangelis album. Because I knew that album, just incredible.
Wait, it's not mine. Wait, hold on.
That album right there is Vangelis, and that's Tubular Bells on there.
What kind of music is it?
It's Exorcist.
Okay, no, because it's weird, because they only play independent music here, but I'm going to give them crap. I'm going to go, hey, guys, what's the Vangelis doing there? So you pass at the improv.
Yeah.
Now do you start trying to get in other clubs, or are you just working on the improv?
I have no act, so I'm just watching. And it's so funny.
Passed, but then you're not even getting on stage.
Oh, I'm not
even. People must hate you.
Oh, no. Well, no, because they got stage time, but they're all the little clubs. It's not even I can go back and go, I don't even know how to work the system to go, yeah, I'm a regular at the improv.
Right.
Because I don't even have an act. But I just sat and watched. So, you know, at the time it was a Seinfeld and Reiser and Carol Leifer and Carol Siskin and just a slew of comics. And I just watched. And my style was really going to be Cosby. It was going to be Cosby meets Pryor in that I work clean. You know, people always go, why are you so clean? Because they always see me corporate or some TV. But when I go to clubs, I started as a club comic. I was just a club comic who told stories. But I had to figure out how to do it because Mendoza told me all my stories involved John Mendoza.
He was on the show.
And yeah.
It was so great to have him on it. And he was, because He still does one of my favorite jokes ever, and I told him this.
Is that the dog with the blind guy?
No, it was. I have a fat friend. In case the world ends, I know he'll be able to find the food. And I remember seeing that, like, on set. That joke always stuck in my mind, and it was such a great joke. But it's okay. Now, what are you saying about John?
John, one of the advices that John gave me, when I got off stage to him what I thought was a funny story, and John goes, "Hey, you know when you do those stories?" And I go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." He goes, "They need to be funny." And I would go, "Well, at the end, the punchline." He goes, "We ain't got time to get to the end."
Why?
And then I would go, "Well, Cosby tells some funny stories." He goes, "Yeah, the key word is they are funny stories. Yours is just rambling for 2 minutes to a punchline."
I'm amazed with Mendoza for the fact that
he gave me advice.
No, he has so many jokes. I'm like, how do you remember? I mean, there's so many. He tells all these one-liners.
They're all one-liners.
And it's like, how do you do
it's a
45
dark version
minutes?
Of Stephen Wright. Yeah. It's a dark twist.
I'm like, what a memory. I mean, it's 45. That's got to be like 200 jokes.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you're working out. So now what's your next foray?
I found a couple clubs that it's a rare situation. If you're a comic who's just beginning that has made it, because I don't think the system works the way it used to. But if you're able to be part of an A club, like the Improv was, but you're not an A act, you're not a B act, you're not a C act, that was a D act.
Okay.
So I had to go and find rooms that I could be an A, B act. And one of them was Comedy U, which was on University. One was Who's on First. The other was this club called Sabrina's. And those are the clubs that I got to work on my material. And I got to be the A act there,
all right,
which made me better to be a B act at the Improv. So when I came on, my act was just exponentially getting better and better. Plus, I was getting more stage time because I had these other clubs than the A acts were at the Improv.
Right.
So just by sheer stage time, I was getting better and better and better. And then the big thing was I came to Silver one day, and I said, she was the owner, Bud Friedman's ex-wife. And I said, "Hey, I think I should be on the weekend." And she goes, "Okay." And they had a 15-minute spot that was at the very beginning of the show. Normally, she had a singer. And so one Friday night, she split it with me and this soap actor who thought he was a stand-up comic. And so we each had 7 minutes.
Okay.
And I only had, now keep in mind, I only had maybe 20 minutes of material at the time. And so I got that spot. And I did well, and she gave me the next one. And so for a couple of months, I would get a Friday or Saturday that opening spot, 10-minute spot. And the smartest thing I did, which I continued to do through my career, which I didn't realize how big a deal this was, I only had 20 minutes of material. And I was now going to places where I'd need 15 minutes of material. So I divided my 20-minute act into two 10-minute sets that I vowed I would never combine ever again. And I forced myself to turn 10 minutes into 15 minutes. So now I had two 15-minute sets. And I kept those 15-minute sets till they became 20, till I had enough to go out and headline. And the other advice that Mendoza gave me was, we did the Silver had this one night booking up in Buffalo somewhere, and we got paid $500 on a plane to the gig, $500, three comics. And I told John there, I go, "Man, I could do this on the road. This is great." And John said, "Don't do it." He said, "Because you're going to go out and you're going to be an opening act or a middle. You're going to make $300, maybe $500. You're going to be eating peanut butter sandwiches." And he goes, "Wait until you're ready to headline. Only go out as a headliner. You never have to look back." And John, those two things that Mendoza gave me that just stuck. So I worked my act up, and we always had Philly, but right. Philly wasn't. I guess it could be the road, but Philly was one of those. It was one of those close. Philly, Boston,
Baltimore.
Yeah, those things. When you went outside of your wheelhouse, when you had to get on a plane to go do a gig,
right.
That was now the road. And so that's what I started doing. And just quickly, I was new meat and got hooked up with the Funny Bones, got hooked up with the Improvs, and that was it.
Now, when did you, because I mean, you were a huge act. I mean, you did The Tonight Show. You've done, I mean, so much TV. And, I mean, people, it's so funny. I was out watching a game last
New
night.
Kids now don't know I'm a stand-up.
Because
they just Raven. They go, well, that's Raven's dad. I go, yeah, Raven's dad had a life before
that show.
See, that's
funny. Because I was sitting there last night. I was watching a football game down at the Black Angus. And, uh-huh. and this guy, who's I know he's big into like PR for comic book and stuff. And he's like, oh, who's been on your show? And I said, oh, I had Robbie Benson on 2 weeks. Oh, really, Robbie Benson? I'm like, yeah. And I go, tomorrow I have Craig Anton and Rondell Sheridan. And he goes, Rondell Sheridan. And I go, yeah, most people, you know, I mean, you sit there and sometimes people mess with you. Oh, you know, and he's like, I said, you know Rondell Sheridan? I said, he goes, yeah, I used to go to the improv out here all the time. And he started doing a bit about you drinking tea in your car or something like
that. Oh, okay.
But it's so funny because people don't know. I mean, it was because people, I guess, for the TV show, but now, but people, I mean, you were always packed it in Philly and you always killed it.
Yeah.
And you always dressed nice.
Yeah. But Philly was a great club. That was also a primo little room. That was the first time that it made me appreciate the Comedy Cellar, because I thought the Comedy Cellar was the smallest room, that there'd be nothing else like it. And then you'd hear about the Holy City Zoo in San Francisco,
right.
and then the Comedy Factory Outlet, and I go, wait a minute, these are small rooms. I'm thinking they're like huge. It doesn't matter that they're small, but they all have one thing in common. And I always tell people, if I had to design a comedy club, I want a club that I can touch the ceiling or almost touch the ceiling standing. I'm 5'11", just letting you know, I'm not 9 feet tall. It's something about a small room with a low ceiling is designed for comedy.
The laughs just pump up you.
Yep.
It's like at the Comedy Works across the street. They had a big thing. So when you tell a laugh there, as I would say, your laugh would be like, and going up here, it just hits you right in the face. I mean, that was for me, that was one of the best places to start out at because it just learned how to be funny. So, okay, so you're doing the road. Now, at this time, were you auditioning for commercial? When did you start acting? I mean, you went to acting school.
I went to acting school. And so while I was doing stand-up at night, I'd gotten a commercial agent, and I was doing commercials, and suddenly commercials took off for me.
I saw you. I remember we were at the club one night, Phil, at the Comedy Factory, and I think you were in like a Crisco commercial.
I did a Crisco.
At the end, you're, hey, and we're like, that's what I'm doing. Because what was weird is the comics like you, I was talking to, a guy who I started out in Philly called me the other day because he listened to the Wayne Cotter show I did.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, like, we all looked up to you guys, and we would see like your pictures on the wall, and we'd be like, oh, that's what we want to be. And then we'd see you in a commercial, like, oh, that's so great. And it's weird. It's like, it's so funny. I don't think it's that way anymore, but it's like there was such, you guys influenced so much, but then all you comics say, we didn't really want to come talk to you because, you know, you were big, but then if we did, you were really cool.
To this day, I will admit, if it's a fan, it could be kind of difficult. If you tell me you're a stand-up comic, I'll sit and talk to you for an hour and a half. I get what you're going through. I get that whole struggle. I've just been there. I don't think there's a comic out here from day one made it in a year. There's not. None. I remember reading early articles where Eddie Murphy had said, I don't know how I made it. He talks about the Bob Nelson and I can't think of the other comic. He goes, they were far more funnier than I was when I started. How I got
Rob
picked?
Bartlett.
That's what I was trying to think of. How I got – now, you remember – Nelson in the heyday.
Oh God, he's
huge. Bartlett in the heyday.
Everyone did.
Oh man,
everyone did the that and the football. I mean, was everyone.
Oh my
did that.
God, huge. I mean, and why Bartlett is not a huge name, I have no clue.
And even Nelson, it's weird. It's like So okay, so you get in the acting now. When did you start getting on TV shows? Because your website says you've been on over 200 shows, and you've been on a lot of stuff. When did you start getting? Do you remember your first role on a TV show?
Well, I remember the first thing I got, but I couldn't do, and I was really mad. I auditioned for Quincy.
Murder.
I got the third. I was their third choice. First choice couldn't make it. Second choice couldn't make it. They called my agent and go, like, last minute, we want him to do it. And I was auditioning. I went for this audition for A Different World, the Cosby spinoff.
Okay.
And so I was at this thing for A Different World, and I go, man, I used to watch Quincy. I to this day would love that I would have had Quincy.
Oh, that'd be the best. That's classic. I mean, it's Klugman.
We passed on it.
Oh.
And then I go to do the show I just said. I forgot.
Different World.
And it turned out to be bullcrap. And so I was really mad about it because I turned down Klugman. Later on, I got another role on A Different World, which was really cool. But for that day, if I had a crystal ball, I would have said, forget it, I'm doing that.
Right.
But I did. I didn't do that many. I got fired off from Fresh Prince show.
You got fired?
I got fired.
Why?
The first day because I'm a theater guy. So I didn't understand. I had a great audition, but I didn't understand that the table read, when you sit with the script for the first day, is performance mode. Because I'm coming from theater. So, and I kind of just read it kind of flat. And just, so they came back. It was also, I can't tell myself because the script was really long and they had to cut some stuff. And so my role got cut. But I'm still like, yeah, I'm never getting fired off a show ever again.
So, what were some of the other shows you did?
I didn't really do that many. I did a Jamie Foxx show.
I saw that's on your reel.
And
you're with Garrett Morris.
Who just called, oh man. I had to drop the name. Garrett Morris called me. I was in Alaska. This is 2 months ago. And this person starts talking. So I can tell it's an old black man. I want to live to be an old black man because I think old black men are the coolest people in the world. They just got history and knowledge. So I'm on the phone, on my cell phone. I'm in Alaska. And I can tell it's an old black man talking to me. But I don't know who it is. And so I go, who is this? And so he says, Garrett, but I didn't hear Morris. I thought I heard Loris or something. So I'm like, who the hell is Garrett? What? So then I go a second time. I go, who is this? And then Garrett goes off. Garrett goes, I'm as old as dust. What do you mean you don't know me? Every time I call you. So finally, I realize that's Garrett, okay? So I realize it's Garrett. And I'm trying to go, Garrett, my bad. But he won't let me get it. He's just digging me. He's just digging me. I can't believe you don't remember from the. I go, Garrett, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry. So he's got a club downtown.
He I performed there. Yeah. And it's, they moved it, though.
But he called me about the new one. This was 2 months ago.
I don't think it's open yet. Or it's about to, I don't know what's going on with it. But every Saturday he would MC, and for me it was like, because you know I have a picture of me and him, and I posted it on Facebook, and the people for my age, I'm 47, everyone's like, wow, that's so cool. Young people, I don't even know, they are from my two broke chicks.
It's
he was like Chico Escuela. Basically, I mean, it's like he was in that amazing years of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So okay, we're running out. We have like 9 minutes left.
Okay, but whatever you want to talk about.
What? Okay, now. How did the role in She's So Raven happen? Now,
That's So Raven. Right now, phone's going to light up. People going, you screwed up She's So Raven.
I'm sorry, people. If I'm a 47-year-old man with no kids. If I'm watching Disney, okay, they'll just call me a pedophile.
I tell people. People go, do you watch the show? I go, why would I watch the show? This is nothing in common at all that I would watch. They go, well, you're on the show. I go, I've been on other shows before.
That's like some of my friends will sit there, and he's like, my friend Frank is they watch iCarly, I said, oh, one of the writers was on, the producers. He's like, oh, yeah, if you watch it. And I actually watched iCarly.
Yeah.
It's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's written very well. But other ones, I'm like, because my nephew is, not my nephew, my girlfriend's nephew is 12, big fan of Big Time Rush. And I know one of the writers. So I got the picture for him. But I'm like, he's like, you ever see the show? I'm like, why would a grown man be sitting in his living room in his boxer shorts going, hey, I'm going to watch Big Time Rush.
I'd be like, to a 10-year-old, I'm going to go watch Burn Notice. You want to watch Burn Notice? No, that's stupid. Now you understand why we're watching these shows.
So how did that come apart?
So it's a luck of luck story. I was, at the time, I had a job. I had one of the best jobs I ever had. I was on a talk show called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and it was The View with two guys. It was me and Dr. Drew, and three women, and it was fantastic. I say to this day, I would love to do a talk show. It's just a great gig. So I got the gig, and I'd finished up already doing Nickelodeon, Cousin Skeeter, so I already did that show. So by that time, I already did my first TV show for NBC, Minor Adjustments. Year went by. Then we did 66 episodes of Cousin Skeeter. Megan Good, the actress Megan Good, was on that show there. Okay. So I finished up with that. And so now I'm doing the talk show, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And my manager, Rick Siegel, calls me and he goes, hey, I got you got a meeting over at Disney. And I go, really? I go, I never had an audition for Disney. I go, wow, cool. And I love meetings. I hate auditions. Right. Love meetings. Meetings are the best. So I go there early because I go for my talk show. I go there, and everybody's mad at me. Every comic there, tons of comics. They're like, why are you here? You got a job. Right. Why are you here? I go, I'm Jamaican. I need as many jobs as I can get, Mark. So I'm just hanging out, and the room is full of people. So I look at the audition sheet, and I see nobody's auditioning for the dad. And I go, cool. Well, I seriously got a meeting with these people. So I'm there for about good 90 minutes. And 6 minutes before, one of the PAs goes, hey, Rondell, they'd like you to read. And I go, you know, you told me this was just a meeting. And I go, yeah, we'd like for you to read. you could have told me this 90 minutes ago. I'm a nice guy. And I go, okay. The scene to me was really complicated. And I did my best. I was just trying to be funny. So I get in the car and I tell Rick, he goes, you didn't audition, did you? And I go, yeah. He said, you should have made an excuse or something, asked to come back so you can be better prepared. So the next day he calls me and he goes, well, he goes, they said you were funny, but they went with a better actor. And I go, oh, okay. So 3 months go by. I get a phone call. Hey, Rondell, you got an audition for Disney. I'm like, wow. I must impress somebody.
Right.
They sent me the sides. Now, the sides I get this time, the script that I get, is nothing like the script I get before, but it reeks of familiarity. Don't ask me why. It just reeks. But this was probably the best audition I ever had because I had to tell a story. And it was a pretty funny story. And so I embellished the crap out of this story. And I figured going in, I'm either going to get this spot or they're not going to like what I'm going to do because I'm going to make a very specific choice.
Okay.
And so wound up loving it. I go back, I get the spot. And when I go into audition the first time, I go, is Raymond Simone in this? No, I go, am I a chef? And they go, yeah. Because the story has nothing to do with cooking or anything. The first one was. And I go, do I have a daughter? And they go, yes. Is my daughter Raven Simone? Yes. I'm confused.
Right, right.
So I go and do it. I find out two shows in that they did the pilot. And in the pilot, Raven was the friend of the psychic girl. She wasn't the psychic. She was the friend of. And she did so well. Raven's a 1,000-watt light bulb. You put her next to any kid, you better be at least a 750-watt light bulb because she is just so good, so funny, she's a professional. So they went, wow, the girl who played the psychic was okay, but Raven's fantastic. What if we make Raven the psychic and all that? So her dad, who was her dad on The Cosby Show, they had said he wasn't funny, and I've had this happen before. They didn't write him funny. They just expected him to be funny.
Okay.
And so I go, I defended him. I go, what you wrote? I watched the pilot. I go, what you wrote wasn't funny. You just trapped a man into trying to make it funny. I got luck of luck, second time around, got the show.
Now, you must have just got a whole new crowd for you. Like, people must just recognize you everywhere.
Yeah, but not in the way that you,
But it's, kids, though, probably.
Yeah, and that's the worst part. It's like, there's nothing, if you know my life, I'm not, except when I'm on stage, I don't really go out and shine, so now that I have little bitty people who don't know any rules of etiquette whatsoever, just tug on you, hey, you getting excited, and I'm like, why are you getting, is there someone behind me, is Justin Bieber behind me? I don't get it. It's literally like waking up the next day, and you are far more famous than you've ever been.
That's weird.
Yeah.
So now do you still perform a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Do you love the comedy?
I love the comedy. I love everything. I love, ladies and gentlemen, Rondell Sheridan, all the way to thank you, good night. Everything else connected to that, the travel, the hotel room, I hate all that. Except I can sit in bed and write.
Now,
that I love.
Okay, now you do cruise ships.
Yes.
Now,
627 cruise ships to date.
Is that you do one show a night or is it two shows?
It all depends on the cruise. Generally, the least amount that you'll do per cruise is one night, two shows.
Okay.
That's the least amount that you'll ever do. Like the Allure and the Oasis, they have their own comedy club. So you do two shows a night, 16 shows in 1 week.
Okay.
Carnival has a comedy club. You do five shows in 1 week. So it all depends on what it is. But normally, big theater, what I love about cruises, they teach you how to perform in front of an audience because you got a 900 to a 1,200 seat audience.
Okay.
Yeah, you got a theater to work with.
So. Now, is it just like weird though for you? Like, I mean, you perform and then you're living amongst them. You
know, that is the weird part. It's like,
you do a show.
Yeah.
Philly, you go to your hotel.
You go to my hotel. I will never see these people again. Yeah.
But, I mean, you and probably like if you talk to someone in the crowd, they probably think you're a friend. Like, if you're sitting around the pool, hey, you want to know? You want to play shuffleboard? Were you too good to play shuffleboard?
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, you know.
That's the comedian. I'm like, when I'm on the ship and it's 4 days before I go on, and after I go on, I'm everybody's friend. But before I go on, I go, you didn't talk to me before.
Right.
I was the black guy on the ship. You didn't say, hey, black guy, come over here and talk to us. No. So suddenly after the show, I'm your best friend now.
Yeah. Now, did you find yourself, do you put weight on when you ship? Because there's so much food.
This past cruise, I did, man. I gained like 7 pounds, and I knew when I was there. It wasn't because of the food. I've just been working on it. I now have a new hobby. It's the most antisocial hobby I could ever have, and no one told me it was antisocial. I'm writing a script.
Okay.
And I've been writing a script for a year now, and I spend about 6 hours a day writing.
Okay.
Completely antisocial. But also, I don't get up, and I love writing in bed, so I don't go and work out, and it's just, it's the worst.
It's crazy. So anyway, we have a minute left. Just tell people your contact info, please.
RondellSheridan.com. You can contact me at AskRondell@AOL.com.
Okay, and it's a great website.
Thank you.
It's a really nice to put together. Also, people, for me, next weekend, October 12th and 13th, all you South Jersey people, I'll be at the Marlton Comedy Cabaret. It's right 10 minutes from where I grew up. So actually, I do a completely different act when I'm out there because it's all about all the stuff. And that's what you know. If you go to certain places, it's all about because the area changed. So check that out. Also, Laughcast, LAFFCAST.com. I'm on there, but go also out to check out some young comics really trying to make things happen in Philadelphia. Some good podcasts. Also, hit me up, Cooper at Indie100, INDIE100.com. Also, Twitter, I'm at Cooper. And you can find CooperTalk.net, past episodes. CooperThought.com is a bunch of my random musings, my random thoughts. And that's it. Anyway, I want to thank you so much, Rondell. It was really a pleasure having you.
I had a great time. It was a great hour.
And this guy's a sharp dresser. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, people, have a wonderful weekend. I'm Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And send me an email. Keep in touch. Have a wonderful weekend.